coming up later in the episode.
Specifically with the music videos, I remember watching like BET and everything, and I'm just like, I don't look like this. I am chocolate. Does that mean that I'm not valuable because these men are saying in every other lyric that they desire women who look this way? You have to have a very strong sense of yourself and sense of confidence to combat that when you're growing up in an atmosphere that is telling you that you're not valuable because of not only the color of your skin, but the shade of it.
This is Still Talking Black, a show about giving perspectives to issues that minorities face every day. I'm your host, Richard Dives. Today's episode is all about colorism. Later on in the episode, I'm going to have a fellow podcaster and blogger come on, and we're going to discuss some things about colorism because this is something that really touches me. My niece told me she wanted to be white so that she could be beautiful. For her, she equated having lighter skin with beauty. I must admit, it was hard to hold back tears by telling her she was beautiful just the way she is. Talking more to her revealed that it wasn't white she wanted to be. It was lighter. She equated all the fair-skinned black kids in her class to being white. I think more than anything, she just wanted to be like everyone else. I let her know that her beautiful brown skin, her puffy afro, made her unique, and that there is beauty in being yourself. There's no one else like you in the world, so always remember that you're enough and that you are beautiful. So what is colorism? Dictionary.com describes colorism as differential treatment based on skin color, especially favoritism towards those with a lighter skin tone, and mistreatment or exclusion of those with a darker skin tone, typically among those of the same racial group or ethnicity. So this is something that affects the black community inside and out. We even treat each other differently inside of our own community sometimes. And that's something that we really need to be aware of. It's always easy to find something that makes us different. If you divide an enemy, you can have them fight themselves and you've already won the battle. Colorism causes us to focus on the things that make us different instead of the things that make us the same. We are all unique individuals with different goals and motivations, but we are still just one people. Inside and outside of an ethnic group, you can find commonalities, but still, every member of each group is unique. Let's take time to embrace our singular uniqueness and the uniqueness of our fellow persons. Understanding that we have differences in and out of our socioeconomic and cultural groups, but regardless of that, we have much more in common. If you like what we're doing here at Still Talking Black, the best way to show your support is by liking, rating, and sharing our content, buying merch from our store at stilltalkingblack.com/shop, or donating using the link in the show description. Every little bit helps. Thank you for your continuous support.
Hey, I am Kay Antoinette of LBF Podcast. And on my show, we just talk about all kinds of things. We have the hard conversation. We meet ourselves. We build from there. And I'm just so happy to be here on this show with Rick.
Hey, did you drop the blogger part of your name?
Kay Antoinette, the blogger. I do have a blog, allegedly. But it's letspillfeatures.com. If you want to read any of my blog posts, I have blog posts about finances, life experiences, like, you know, depression and, you know, quarter life crises, all that kind of stuff is up there. So go check that out.
Quarter life. You know, you're young when you say quarter life. Ooh.
I wrote that whenever I was 25 and going through a quarter life crisis. So. But it's always a good read.
So I know that you talked about colorism before on an episode, and I think you even did a blog post about it, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Not for colorism. I did an episode about it, but I haven't actually done a blog post about it ever.
In your own words, how would you describe colorism?
Ooh, I feel like it's so complex, right? Colorism, when I think of it, is just this subset of like any kind of system that works as an oppressive force, right? So racism being the dominating force there, and then colorism being underneath it, underneath that umbrella. And it's just one of those things within our community, black community, that keeps us against each other, or kind of like this hierarchy of how we kind of sometimes look at each other with prejudices, biases, and the same thing, the same functions that racism does, colorism does. So that's how I would describe it.
I think the scariest thing about colorism is that it's one of those things that I feel like the effect of it is seen almost equally inside and outside of the culture. You know, because we have colorism within the culture itself, because we come in so many different shades. That's something that affects us all. I always kind of equate colorism to like pretty privilege.
Pretty privilege is such a, I mean, like, in
honesty, you know, it's even some movies. When I look back at some movies, I look at the way that now when I look at movies, I look at them differently. Mm-hmm. So I look at the way that people are portrayed, like in video games and all forms of entertainment, because one of the things that I constantly preach is that media is so powerful and people do not realize how powerful media is.
Right.
And so I kind of pay attention to the way that Black people are depicted in movies. And not only that, the skin tone of Black people in movies. And a lot of times in certain movies, the darker skinned Black person is the evil Black person. But the fairer skinned Black person, oh, that's the hero. That's the good guy. We like the light skinned version. I can think of even movies where whenever there's a lead Black person, that Black person is very, very fair. And, you know, you catch stuff like that, and the stuff that you don't really always think about consciously. But if you start to look at it, you might not even look at your favorite movies the same way anymore.
I honestly had this moment the other day. I love My Wife and Kids. Like, shows like that, Jamie Foxx show, Martin, like, I would put those on repeat and just keep watching them. And I was watching My Wife and Kids, and I don't know, it was just one scene. It had all the, like, leading women in the shot, and they're all fair skin. And I was like, oh, like, you know, I knew, you know, it was during a time where colorism in the media and on shows and stuff wasn't being as talked about. But it was very just glaringly obvious, because I've had these kind of conversations. When I was younger, I didn't notice it. I just knew that I didn't see myself on screen. Like, I didn't feel like, you know, some of the material was relatable. And so I think another part of what's really insidious about colorism is the erasure piece.
You said the erasure?
Erasure, right? Think about like the character of Storm. I think that's a good analogy to use. Is like, she in the comic books, even though she's a fictional character, right?
Right.
In the comic books, she's dark skinned, like dark, midnight black. Every portrayal of her has been lightened. Has been portrayed by an actress who is of fairer tone. And when these conversations are had within our community, it's always, or not always, but a lot of the tone is, well, you should just be grateful that Black people are getting represented. And then my response to that is, well, not all Black people are being represented. You know, like, if we're talking about representation matters, and that's what we say when we're talking you know, to racist or to the racist system, then it matters even when we're talking about colorism. So I don't know. I think we can talk for hours about colorism, honestly. What has been your experience with it?
You know, it's something I never really thought too much about ever. And like, it's kind of like one of those things, once you turn the switch on, you can't turn it back off. And, you know, I guess I would be considered lighter skin.
You guess.
See, like, even that is something that I never really have put that much thought into until I started, you know, dating as an older adult. And I had dated some darker skinned women, and they would make fun of me, and they'd be like, oh, you acting light skinned. Or, you know, you and your emotions, like, and they would kind of like equate like the color of my skin as a way of acting. And it's almost like, I don't, it's not racism. It's almost like a different kind of prejudice. It's like, you automatically see that I'm light and you think a certain way of me, and the different tones get different things added onto them, you know, different characteristics in it. It's something that I think it was funnier, and, you know, you didn't think about it as much when you were a lot younger. As the world starts to turn, and different things start to change, you start to think about those things a lot more in a different context than you used to. and even trying not to perpetuate some of the stereotypical things that get said, you mm-hmm. know, like oh like light-skinned dudes are soft. That was like a really big thing in meme culture and Black Twitter. It was like talking mm-hmm. about this, how light-skinned dudes watch Drake, and this right. how dark-skinned dudes do this, and there was always something equating to color. And one of the things that I said, if you can get your enemy to fight them between themselves, then you've already won the war. And it was something that someone had given to me one time. I wish I remember exactly the book it was, but I don't want to speak improperly. But basically what it said was that it was talking about slavery, and it was a slave owner, and there's a pamphlet that was given out to other slave owners. And basically what said was, separate the light skin from the dark skin and the good hair from you know, the kinky hair, and you separate them, and then you make them fight themselves, and then you'll never have to crack the whip again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, you know, so this colorism stuff did not just happen. All of a sudden, it kind of was like one of those things that was planted in us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things have been planted in us since slavery. And it's something that we've carried on. And if you look at it, it's just a way of keeping Black people from unifying in certain situations, even though sometimes it's really, really slight.
Oh, I agree with that. It's so much of what was said. But for me, I think that, like you said, when you become aware of colorism, it's like you become aware of your experience. And so to break that down, what I mean is, as a dark skinned woman, right, I didn't understand that what a lot of my experiences were was colorism until I understood what colorism was. Mm-hmm. I knew I was being treated differently. I was being looked at differently. I wasn't given the same opportunities, or I wasn't being heard on the same level as those who, you know, have fairer skin or were considered lighter skin, right? And it's really interesting when we think about how, you know, it was implanted into our communities, because the question is always, okay, we know this exists, but then how do we get to the other side of it? For me, when we have this talk, a lot of times it centers around like hurt feelings. You know, like, you know, lighter skinned people they have a privilege, but they don't necessarily get away with not having racism enacted against them, right? So you can be an oppressor and be oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
But until those very real advantages are acknowledged, then we can never move forward. And so this act of trying to silence the experiences of each other and deny those privileges keeps us in a cycle where we never get forward in the conversation. We never move to a place of like compassion and understanding and unity, because at the end of the day, somebody got to admit that, girl, you got a little bit advantage, you know, like, or, you know, for men especially. The thing with colorism, when it comes to how it functions amongst the sexes, is darker skinned people are seen as more masculine. So that works in the favor sometimes of men,
mm-hmm.
as well as work against them. And it works against women all the time. Nobody wants a masculine woman, right? Mm-hmm. So dark skinned women are always seen as masculine or aggressive. For light skinned men and women, they're seen as more feminine. And so women can be in their feminine energy and be expected to be, you know, damsels and need help and all this different kind of stuff. But for men, that doesn't necessarily work in that way. Like, that's why you get called soft, because mm-hmm. those things, those labels and stereotypes are assigned based on your color. And it's really crazy.
It's in everything. You know, we mm-hmm. reinforce the stereotypes within ourselves. And you think about, like, racism and prejudice and all of that has to do a lot with stereotypes and giving a whole group of people a certain attributes. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's doing it inside of our own community. And we carry this along with meme culture. And if you listen to music, you know, like mm-hmm. music, we carry it in and music and also movies. And oh, it's just some movies I just can't watch. Like, it was this movie that I was watching one time. I'm not going to say the name of the movie.
I want to know. It's the movie.
I'll tell you after the show. It okay. was this movie I was watching, and the heroine of the movie was white. And mm-hmm. in the opening scene, she was fighting people. But the only people that were getting hit were, like, the Asian people and the Black people. And then later on, a black lead character came and joined the rest of the ensemble cast. But the black person, the black woman that joined was fairer skin woman. The darker skinned women were the ones that was getting hit. It was a scene where like a whole bunch of men were doing this thing and like the black guy is the one that got hit. And, you know, it could just be coincidence or
we're expendable.
Or, you know, that's just how you think about like our race. And just thinking about that, we do that inside of ourselves is it just kind of it's like a wake up call. But the thing I think that you were saying is that we have to be willing to admit that there are things that we do that's not okay. And sometimes we're subconscious, but but we have to have those tough conversations. I think a lot of times I think it's getting better, but we have to get more comfortable being uncomfortable. And that's kind of been like my new thing. That's been like my 2021. Like it feels like this has just been 2020 part two, but that's been my 2021 is getting more comfortable being uncomfortable because the growth comes in the uncomfortable positions. So when you have the uncomfortable conversations, that is a chance for you to expand and really hear somebody else's perspective and really investigate maybe it's things inside of you that you don't want there or maybe you're portraying things that you don't want to portray.
Right. Because the idea of it is like once if you come to me and we're having this conversation, I think a lot of people, they'll deny colorism because they don't want to admit that they participate in it. So then the conversation, you know, gets kind of stonewalled from there. But it's like, listen, we were born into this system. Some of us, we know, like, I'm not going to sit here and have a conversation with a woman who or a man who is a different color than I or a shade than I am. And they're going to tell me that they don't believe in colorism. You know, I'm not going to believe you because you probably are having a hard time in admitting how you participated in it. If we can get past the trying to judge each other so much on it, because it's a hierarchy. And we do the same thing when we talk about classism. We do it with racism. We do it every other structured system that tries to put people ahead. And the whole crabs in a barrel mentality kicks in and everybody wants a piece of the pie, no matter the means of it. But if that means you're kicking your neighbor or you're kicking your sister or your brother in this community, then we need to look at that. We need to see how we can get better at uplifting each other instead of, you know, stepping over each other. I don't know. Like, I feel like I had to look at myself and see the ways that I participated in colorism. If I did it and at what level I did it, you know, especially with like the men I was attracted to or the men I chose to be in romantic connections with, they were always dark skinned. And I had to ask myself, like, is that because something in your mind is telling you that they're more masculine, you know, that they're more deserving of your womanhood because they're more men than a light skinned man? Because I used to say that. I'm like, I'll never date a light skinned man. But that's exactly part of what it was. And then the other part was just, you know, me seeing dark skin as the first love of my life with my dad. So that was, you know, connected there too. But we have to ask ourselves those hard questions. And like you said, get uncomfortable with what the answer will be for what it is.
There's so many different levels to it, you know. Like you said, you said it with your dad. And like as a man, I know that it all depends on the era, especially if you're talking about dating within like the black community. It all depends on your era because it's like, especially like I feel like women too, but like I'm looking at it from a man's point of view because I'm a man. And I remember years where light-skinned dudes was in and it's like, oh, everybody, I got to give me a light-skinned dude. And then something happens and then dark-skinned dudes are in and it's like, oh, forget you light-skinned brothers, it's all about the dark-skinned brothers. And it just flip-flops. I remember like a Wale song, he was talking about he was trying to figure out how to be like Wesley Snipes, you know what I'm saying? And he has a beautiful song called Shades on his first album where he talks about that. But it's so much time we do pay so much attention to color, even from the girls in the videos. I remember watching the thing about women, darker skinned women in the music videos saying like it's not enough of us in the videos, it's always the fair skinned women. Like where are the darker skinned women at?
Let me tell you, that used to really like mess with my psyche, and not to the point where I'm just like, I didn't feel good enough, but it's just like, what is happening? You know, in the 90s, it was all about dark skinned women. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, speaking to what you said, where the trends change or whatever the case may be. But when we look at the long trajectory of like who is more desired and has longevity as a desirability in our community, it's the fair skin, you know, women and the darker skin men as, you know, compatible, whatever. But specifically with the music videos, I remember watching like BET and everything. And I'm just like, I don't look like this. Like, I don't look like this. I am chocolate up and down, in and out. And so does that mean that I'm not valuable because these men are saying in every other lyric that they desire women who look this particular way? You have to have a very strong sense of yourself and sense of confidence to combat that. But when you're growing up in an atmosphere that is telling you in so many different ways that you're not valuable because of not only the color of your skin, but the shade of it, it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, and you think about even something like that, it's like you go into what you would think would be a safe space. Like, all right, mm-hmm. these are my people, but I'm not represented even among my people. Like, it's one thing to be like the general world, like, you know, black people as a whole are barely represented, but I'm going to a place that is my people and I don't see anybody that looks like me.
Right.
That says something. And I feel like whether, especially if you don't realize it, it does something to your head. It may, like you said, it may make you feel like maybe I just maybe I'm not supposed to be in this group. You know, mm-hmm. maybe I don't belong here. It kind of starts to set up that precedent. I always say that I learned more from what my parents did than what they said.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. 'Cause people's actions, and it'd be the subtle ones. For me, I'll use this as an example, work related, right? Mm-hmm. So when we think about colorism, we always think about, you know, romantic connections, but no, it's everywhere. Where I was working was predominantly black. And what I noticed was I could have every right to say something and say it right and speak up and call things out. And it would always, no matter my tone, no matter I'm talking like this, very soft, very articulate, right? Very understanding and logical. It would always be received as aggressive, as problematic. Then you have another person, lighter than me, say it aggressively and combat, you know, everything, and it'd be received.
And that's fine.
And I used to think that I was like, well, what is it? And it took me so long to realize, like, I was changing my approach. I was thinking that I was doing something wrong. Maybe I wasn't using the right language, changing everything about myself to make sure that I was going to be received well. And it's so disheartening when you realize it's something you can't change. Mm-hmm. I can't change my skin color, so, or my the shade of my skin.
Nor should you want to.
And I don't, you know, but, you know, to be heard and feel like I'm being valued, that was what was happening in my workspace, is these colorism or colorists that were in positions of power would only listen to those or receive those who they found desirable or they found valuable based on the color, the shade of their skin. And it's a really hard experience when you have that, because it's just like, I'm going to go into this space and you're always going to see me as aggressive. Now I am the angry black woman because I have to be, you know, louder to be heard. I have to be, you know, more assertive to get my point across, because otherwise you're going to ignore me.
I think it goes back, and I feel like a lot of things go back to perspective and even perception. You know, like before you open your mouth, like I'm weighing you up. I think, oh, you're darker skin, you're a woman, you do this and this and that, you must be like this. So if you do anything that even remotely looks like what I already thought in my mind, that's going to be my confirmation bias. All right, you're just going to reconfirm it. Mm-hmm. But just like everything else, and you think about this is something that we even need to work in within ourselves. It's definitely outside of the culture, but definitely inside of the culture as well. It's, we need to start to change those standards and think about, try to take out the skin tone as a determinant of beauty. You know what I mean? Take that as a fact. I really started to understand it a lot more when I started to grow my locks. When I started growing my locks, I started to look at the world a little bit differently because of how much I analyzed.
Not the knowledge is growing.
So, yeah, that's what it is. No, but the way that the world was going to perceive me in the way that I had to analyze the way that everybody else was going to perceive me, it made me think about the way that I was perceiving everybody else. So, you know, like you have to open up your mind and even like, you know, from hair at work and skin tone and, you know, just every little thing, we have like these misconceptions and a lot of things we've taught and we're kind of programmed, you know what I mean? In a sense, we're programmed to like certain things. And that's what the media would love to do, is to make you like certain things and not like other things. And it just keeps getting reinforced, and it's just something that we have to have conversations about. But I do feel like it has changed quite a bit. I do feel like that.
I do want to say that a lot of times I see people have these really intense and passionate and straightforward conversations about racism, right? How we can dismantle racism, how we can get there. And they don't understand how closely and how married colorism is to racism, right? So you have all these passions about the understanding of, you know, racist and how that affects our everyday life as Black people. But then when it comes to colorism, you don't understand that concept when it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just shade to shade and not color to color. When we talk about desirability and, you know, divorcing the idea of who is desirable, we can't do that until we divorce the idea of, like, you know, this white standard, because that's what it is.
It is.
The lighter you are, the closer you are to white, to perfection. And so until we like actually uncover all these layers,
quote unquote, do the perfection. Real work. I just wanted to throw that in
quote
there.
Quote unquote. Yeah, we come on now.
Just wanted to throw that in there.
We already know. You know, until we actually like see how interconnected all of this is, we're not going to really get far. Because my question with people is, okay, let's say we do this mental racism, we still going to be dealing with it within our communities, because colorism is still going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, colorism doesn't just happen in the Black community. Look at India.
That's a great point. Places
like that, Africa, with the skin whitening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like they have these big campaigns to lighten skin, because the lighter you are, the closer to desirable, the more opportunities and the real cost, like the real benefits that affect your life come into play. And the rewards in people's livelihood are connected to their shade of their skin. So we have to tackle it all together. We have to tackle racism and colorism. And by doing that, we kind of have to unravel how we perform it in ourselves.
So it's so much to that. You know, you really want to get down to the nitty gritty, especially when it comes to work. I think I always think about work, and it's like, it's metrics a lot of times that you can measure at work. You can see if somebody's performing or not. It shouldn't matter. Unless it's a leadership role, it shouldn't matter if they get along with other people, if they do their job well and they're not causing any problems, you know? So it's something that I think about, and it's kind of related, and it's probably going to sound out of left field when I say it. I was having a conversation with some people, and I was saying, basically, we're talking about people that got canceled, right? Mm-hmm. People got canceled. And the question that I was wondering, and it's like, I really want to have a deeper discussion, but not here, but I definitely want to have a deeper discussion somewhere, is that, can you like someone's work and still be a fan of their work and not like them as a person?
Kanye.
So yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, can you like, the more you get to know somebody, the more you like or dislike them. And it's, if they make really good music or they are a really good actor, like, and that's their craft, but they are a crappy person, you know what I mean?
Or, can you appreciate the art, not the artist?
Yeah, is that a place? Because I feel like in a way that they're kind of tied together. Like, can you appreciate the attributes of a person without like being physically attracted to them? Because end of the day, you're going to be attracted to what you attracted to, period. You know what I mean? You can't say like, oh, you need to date somebody that looks like this. You know, end of the day, like it's less of a choice. And sometimes you're just attracted to who you're attracted to. And it's like, you don't have any control over who's attractive to you. So that's the thing I'm wondering.
Yeah, I think part of it is a choice. And I'll say this, like, whenever we're doing the self-work, you have to figure out where your preferences came from.
Mm-hmm.
If we know that the idea of colorism was implanted, right, from racism, you've been programmed to think certain beliefs about certain things, including skin color and skin tone. Texturism being one of those things as well, you know, hair quality and all that stuff. Like, all it goes deeper. But I think not enough people challenge their preferences. They think that, oh, just because I believe this, then this is right. Where did that belief stem from? And that's why I said I had to check myself. I had to go back and say, where did my preference for darker skinned men come from?
So did you date a light skinned dude after that?
I've dated the rainbow. Not after that. I think I had already dated the guy. But when I actually really start talking in depth about colorism, it was like a year or so later. And I was really just exploring the topic. And I realized, you know, me having that preference didn't stop me from having the experience of someone who was a shade or two lighter or darker or whatever, because you like who you like. But I think so many people go off of pop culture. Mm-hmm. They go off of, I don't know, street credit, you know, based off of who you can get, these kind of ideas about you're more valuable by who you have on your arm. Mm-hmm. And usually that is, you know, a function of colorism too. So preferences, I think, allow so many people to hide behind the truth of where they get them from, because people know. People know. And they'll just say, oh, well, that's my preference. You can't tell me what my preference is. Okay, well, that preference came from the mainstream that says that lighter skinned people are, you know, better than darker skinned people, but you don't want to challenge that. Now, if you look at it and you still want to date somebody who is, you know, lighter skinned, that's fine. The difference is a preference doesn't say that I'm only going to date this person that looks like this. A preference is I prefer to date this person. That doesn't keep you from dating other people of other shades, but people look at it that way. So I can have a preference for darker skinned men. That ain't going to keep me from dating all kinds of shades, you know, like, yeah.
I mean, I've dated all over the rainbow too. So I definitely understand that. I know my preferences have changed over the years. And, you know, like the way that I see beauty is definitely different. And I'm way more appreciative of all shades and colors now. And You look at it, some of us try to get closer to being lighter or fairer skin to reach the perfect quote unquote beauty standard. It's funny to look at the other side of the people that are really fairer skin, how many of them want to tan to be more of, you know, the browner skin. So,
yeah,
you know,
equalizing it
a little bit. Everybody wants to be like somebody else, almost
something different, right?
It's just
crazy.
It is crazy. And it's funny how quickly it can change. You know, as you grow and you change and your preferences change, you start to take a different look at the world. You analyze things differently. Now, thinking about the way you said it, like, I never took a hard look when I was, you know, a teenager, like, oh, I wonder why I like, you know, this type of woman.
You're a teenager. Nobody thinks you know, like so, that.
But it's like, as I started to see the world and I started to analyze the world and started to want to learn more about my people and like why my people are getting treated this way and different things that are going on in my community, I felt like my preferences started to change as I became embrace my blackness more. I started to embrace everything in the black, in the black spectrum. I mean, because like even just in my family, we have the lightest of light skin to the darkest of brown skin, you know.
I think that's most black families. And that's the beautiful thing about us. Like, we are like so complex and so beautiful. Like, my mother, she's probably like a half a shade darker than you. So, but she's definitely lighter than me. My granddaddy's like lighter skin. And, you know, it's so many other things in between. My older sister is brown skin. My middle sister is a little darker than me. And so it's beautiful to see, but colorism in itself doesn't just function within our community. It functions outside of it. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can have these statistics that say darker skinned people are more likely to get stopped by police and more likely to get arrested on those stops. You have these statistics that say darker skinned people are more likely to not get the job compared to if they're up against someone who is fair skinned. Mm-hmm. And the same statistics that say that lighter skinned women or, you know, men are more likely to get married. And so when we talk about it, we really have to take a deep look at what we're saying when we call something a preference. Mm-hmm. and what that means. What are the real world effects of what that preference is? And how are we actually projecting that preference out into the world? Because there are harmless ways, you know, you like what you like. Yeah. But if you have the power to actually discriminate and enact that discrimination and prejudice based on that colorism and those ideas, then we have a problem.
Then it kind of gets dangerous. It becomes something else.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes into pretty privilege, too. You know what I mean? It really does. There's so many, and a lot of the problems that we have, we try to narrow it down to one particular thing. And a lot of times it's 100 different little things that make up one big problem. But we look for the biggest thing and it's like, it's this, and we're going to tackle this, and then everything's going to be perfect. And it's no, we got to work on every little thing. I'm really hoping that just inside of the Black community, I will hope that we can start to change the perception of how we see each other first. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it is, you know, because a lot of times we even believe the stereotypes that are painted about us. It's like, oh, we're violent, and like, ooh, if I was in the hood, because I live in the suburbs now, I'm gonna be looking out. You know,
I don't want to be a strong Black woman no more.
I had an episode where I recorded with someone, and she said she does not want to be. She has to remind herself that she's not a superwoman because that label keeps getting put on Black women.
And, especially dark skinned Black.
And then it's like, you can't rest. And it's like, you think I can do all of this stuff and not get tired? And it's just not healthy. It's not a healthy mindset. I feel like a lot of times we've embraced some of these stereotypes, like some of the better ones, you know, for a better term. We kind of embrace them. But then a lot of them are unrealistic. Like, oh, I got to hustle. I got to work 24 hours a day.
That one really be grinding my gears.
Because it's like, we just got to hustle. We got to hustle 24 hours a day. And it's like, no, like, I've said it before. Like, I don't want to hustle for 70 years and then go and retire and die. Like, I want to hustle for a reason. I want to enjoy the quality of life. And yes. I want to enjoy the people around me, you know? So
I was talking to Danny the other day, and I told her, I was like, you know, I have no interest in being a millionaire. I would be okay if I make a little 100 grand, 200. I could do everything I need with that. As long as I have money to travel, I don't have to check the price tag on everything, because I'm not going to want something extra expensive. I can get the house I want, the cars I want. I'm good. I said, but the realization is so many people hustle just become millionaires and get there, and it's still not enough. And then you don't even have enough time to spend, you know, enjoy your money and spend it, you know.
I mean, even more than that, you don't have time to enjoy the people. I know we're getting a little bit off topic, but no, it's fine. It's just the way that I think about wealth is different as I study financial literature and different things. The way that we look at people and the way that we think that wealth looks like, and that's a prime example. That's a prime example of, like, even it's related. Not that I think more about it, it's related. The way that we look at people who we think have a lot of success and money and have wealth aren't always the way that wealth is actually done. Like, a lot of times wealthy people will walk around with, you know, like, some Skechers on and some regular old blue jeans and drive a Chevy, you know what I mean? Not a souped up Chevy, just like a regular used Chevy that's 2 or 3 years old. And those people have wealth. And what wealth really is and what it equates to is being able to not have a job and still be fine and be able to retire and have enough money to sustain your lifestyle. But what we see wealth as a lot of times in the Black community is the people who are flossing, got a new Benz every other week, you know what I mean, has the biggest house. That's not always wealth. Sometimes you have people who earn a big income, but if you're earning $1 million a year, you're not wealthy if you're spending $999,099 a year.
Right. Because you keep upping the stakes and upping the spending, you know?
Yeah. So I think wealth is more about stability, but the way that we view wealth is so different. So the thing that a lot of us are aiming for when we're trying to reach wealth is the picture of wealth is just so wrong in our heads that we really don't even understand what we're aiming for.
Financial freedom is hoarding money. And that's one thing that I've been exploring this last year is my relationship with money and where that, you know, financial anxiety and everything else comes from, and how I've been actually enacting that anxiety within my life. And it, the way it looked was I was chasing money, and by chasing money, I was being miserable. Like, I was taking the job that paid the most, but it wasn't the one that made the most sense for me.
You know, one of my biggest things about this show is that I think that everything is about perspective. And a lot mm-hmm. of times the perspective that we're looking at is wrong. And if we're looking at the wrong perspective and we're not paying attention to the things that we really should be paying attention to, then we're going to be striving for things that don't necessarily make sense. So right. if we're thinking that skin tone is the thing that we need to get towards, and you get the lightest person or you get the darkest person without analyzing any of the other characteristics that come along with that, you're chasing something. You're chasing a false narrative for somebody else. Now, it's cool. Like, if you want to show off, that's fine. But at the end of the day, it's going to be you and that person in the room.
Right. So, yeah. And liking the person for the other characteristics and the who they are. I had one guy I was dating, lighter skin guy, and I was the first dark skin woman he had ever dated. And we were having a very real and open conversation. And he candidly said to me, he was just like, yeah, I was dating these other women because to me, it was a status thing. Mm-hmm. You know, to get the woman that was lighter skin, or to get the woman that was, you know, mixed, or to get the woman that, you know, was desirable, it was an ego boost for me. And I was just like, well, then what am I? Like, don't be trying to throw it my way. But, you know, that was just a joke. You know, on the other side of that, I look at how, you know, you swing too far to the other side and people are now trying to show the darker skinned people love. But is it genuine? Mm. Do you really see me? Are you still just looking at the shade of my skin and saying, oh, I know you ain't been getting no love, so let me love on you. Like, can you just love me because I am beautiful and you recognize that despite anything else? But I don't know. It's a really complicated relationship we have with coming to these realizations and trying to correct them.
How do we start to correct them? Do we just talk about it more? Is it more self-exploration? Because I know we all have to explore ourselves, but we also have to explore ourselves as a community and how we treat one another. Because I definitely have seen and heard of families that have fair skinned people and darker skinned people, and the darker skin or the fair skinned people get treated like step people because they don't look like they're not beautiful in the way that the other people will say that they are.
Or vice versa. You have some situations where, because the colorism and the pain and the hurt of it runs so deep, you have the lighter skinned people get treated differently mm-hmm. and abused and everything else in their household because they're the lighter skinned ones, and the darker skinned people get, you know, treated better. And that was one of the things that we mentioned on the episode on LBF. But I do still think that it starts with us being honest. And what I mean by that is, you mentioned before, you know, the privilege being part in play and so many different things being in play, not just colorism, right? So for me, yes, I'm a darker skinned woman, but I'm small. So yes, I can be seen as aggressive, but not as aggressive as I would be seen if I was a thicker mm-hmm. or a bigger dark skinned woman. I have body privilege. I can admit that I am privileged and oppressed. We have such an issue within our community to admit that both things can be true. So you'll have so many people that can say, well, we all black. I can't be out here oppressing you if I'm, you know, in the same boat as you. But it's like, no, that's not how it works. You know, once we can admit the advantages we have over the other person, the black privilege in whatever way it shows up for you, whether it be financially, location, whether it be family dynamics, body type, whatever. Once we can admit our privilege, then we can have a more honest conversation. And from that, we can grow. But a lot of us just aren't willing to like say, hey, yes, I have this privilege, because we don't want to lose it.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said, the duality of being privileged and oppressed at the same time, I think it's a lot of truth in that, because it's some areas where you think about it, where your color might be an asset and it gets you something that someone that has a different skin tone might not get. And then other areas of you might be a disadvantage because of that. Mm-hmm. So you can have both. I think about, like, I mean, going back to that thing we were talking about earlier, it's like, I think about some of the most horrible human beings on the world has made some of the most beautiful art ever. And it's kind of hard to reconcile that, you know what I mean? But It's tough. It is a duality, and it doesn't have to be black or white. You don't have to be, you know, like, just because you're this doesn't mean you're the greatest person in the world. You can still be flawed in different areas, because the singularity of us is so many different aspects of us. We talk about, if you even just talk about code switching just being like, not even just the way that we talk, but the way that we behave. And it's not that we necessarily sometimes, it's not that we're trying to necessarily fit in somewhere. It's just so many different selves that you have. You have yourself that you are in different situations and different groups, and that self fits in differently in that group than it does with a different group. So even
that's
looking
sociology 101.
Yeah. So even like looking at that, you have so many different selves, and, you know, just trying to embrace all of it, because some things about you could be good. You could be a good person and you could still be a crappy dad, or you could be a good dad but a crappy person, and or whatever it might be. You know, it's not all singular.
Right. We're multifaceted.
Yeah.
And the sooner we realize that runs into every area and aspect of our being as humans, the sooner we can actually have constructive conversations and constructive progress. Like, you're still black. Nobody's trying to take that away from you when we're talking about things like colorism, right? You're still black. That's just going to be how it is till the end of time. But you can also admit that there are other things that are happening in and around you in this community that either advantage you or disadvantage you. And you might be performing in those things or you might not. So, yeah, we're going to get there. I have belief that we will. I know that I will always call it out, though. And it makes people very uncomfortable. And I kind of love it.
I think it starts with that. I think that would be my answer. Like, I think it starts with calling it out. And I think a lot of times, especially black people, we've been so nice. We've just been so nice and not calling stuff out. But whether it's within the community or outside of the community, I really think it's time to start calling things out as we see them. Because that is really the only way that we can get rid of that. Because even if it's just a joke, it still perpetuates a thought, a mindset that we need to work to go beyond. The one thing you can control how you react to people reacting to you, but you can't control how people react to you. You know what I mean? You can't control how people see you. Mm-hmm. You can just put out the best you and the most you possible, but you can't control how they react or how they see you. You can only control how you present yourself and how you respond to how people respond to you.
You have people that are just bitter out here from their experiences of feeling unheard and unseen. And so they will kind of project that even when the situation doesn't call for it. Like, if I were to go out and, you know, see a group of light skinned women and I just be like, look at them. They think they're cute. Is that fair? They are cute, probably, you know what I'm saying? As women are usually, you know, very cute. But am I just basing that on their skin color because I feel some type of way that I haven't been given the attention or something, or I had negative experiences within my own shade of skin? Like, you know, you do have people that have that very real psychological thing that they still haven't dealt with. And they project that even when situations don't call for that level of
zeal.
You know, like.
Well, look, this has been a great conversation. Thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it talking to you.
Of course. I always love this conversation. So I hope your listeners enjoyed it and they can, like, you know, let us know what the thoughts are on colorism overall.
That's all I have for you for this episode. But before you go, I'd like to put a little spotlight on melanin. Spotlight on Melanin is the part of the show where I like to spotlight a creator, influencer, artist, business owner, or activist of color. Today, I would like to spotlight Mirage Virtuoso. Mirage is a musician that plays the violin and also sings. Her single, Gray Matter, puts her beautiful vocals on display. She is also an avid shoe connoisseur that you can often find selling rare kicks on her Instagram. You can listen to her single, Gray Matter, on Spotify and Apple Music, and you can see where she's performing or what shoes she's selling on her Instagram account at MirageVirtuoso_. That's MirageVirtuoso_. Links to her social and her single are in the show notes. Make sure you go check her out. If you or someone you know would like the chance to be featured on Spotlight on Melanin, send us an email at spotlight@stilltalkingblack.com. Please include links to their social media and why you feel they should be spotlighted. So again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Still Talking Black is a Crown Culture Media LLC production. It is produced by me, Richard Dodds. Our theme music was created by the DJ Blue. Please make sure to rate and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcasting app. You can follow the show on Instagram at Still Talking Black. Until next time, keep talking.